Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love, which shares stories of spiritual awakenings, spiritual communication, healing energies, miracles, and ways to go within to rediscover your true essence and life force. I am most delighted to welcome Nick Inman, author of A Guide to Mystical France. Nick asked, "Think you know France? Look again. The most visited country in the world is full of secrets and hints of ancient wisdoms." Hello, Nick, and thank you for joining us on Healing From Within.
I'm very glad to be a guest, Cheryl. Thank you.
Nick, as listeners of Healing From Within are well aware, my guests and I search within our own experiences and discoveries to learn more about the world and ourselves, to answer age-old questions about creation, spirituality, human and divine nature, and to uncover the ancient wisdom that still is viable and valuable in helping us maintain a healthy, joyful physical life and spiritual experience. When we understand the duality of our being, our energetic soul presence, and our physical world, we are able to participate and create our best life. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Nick will guide us through the hidden sacred sites, exploring people, architecture, and uses behind the legendary sites of Carnac, Mount Saint Michael, Notre Dame, Chartres, and other places less known but equally important. Some of the people we may encounter on this exploration of France include the Templars, Cathars, Gorbachev, King Arthur, Nostradamus, and alchemists. For the last 25 years, British-born Nick Inman has been a travel writer specializing in France, the country he lives in and loves. He has a lifelong interest in and an extensive knowledge of things esoteric and spiritual. He is a photographer, journalist, editor, and translator, and has a long-term interest in personal development and complementary therapies. He is curious and in awe of life and its possibilities. And to me, Nick, you sound like a modern Vitruvian man. Welcome.
Thank you.
That's what I hope we're all turning into as we evolve. It is
the
hope.
Yeah. I'm just somebody who asks questions, yeah.
Right, someone who asks questions. That's the way to go.
Yeah.
Nick, I always love to ask my guests to think back to their childhood and remember an event or person or interest that may have stimulated them to become the adult they are today with the values and goals that have fueled their life, work, and interest. So think back for a minute to the boy you were.
Yeah, that's a very difficult question. I don't know what would have guided me here. I mean, my first memory is I was always a sort of dissident. You know, I was always asking questions, and not I wasn't disobedient, but I always questioned why authority would tell me to do something. So I think from a very early age, I was on my own path, trying to find my own answers.
And there you just gave a very important answer. You were questioning some of the people because deep down inside you had a knowingness. You had an awareness of more than your early years, and you knew you were here to explore this world and to discover or remember many things that were already within you. And that's a beautiful explanation of what makes people, or a person, yourself in this case, go out and do all the things you've done, and to be in awe of life, and to appreciate the gift of life. And thank you very much for that answer. Excellent. Tell us about your newest book and the motivation behind it.
Okay. Well, I'm a travel guide writer by profession. That's what I do. So travel companies like Fodors or Michelin or many others come and ask me to do a travel guide, and I go around France and I write about the hotels and restaurants and the cathedral and the palaces. And while I've been doing all that, I've had my spiritual interest, of course, my esoteric bent, and I've had my eyes open for things that I'm interested in, which won't fit into travel guides. because the travel guides are about practical things for tourists. They're not about speculation, they're not about inner feelings, or they're really quite focused and practical. And so I found myself accumulating a lot of material that wouldn't fit into the normal travel guides. And I thought, if I'm interested in this, other people are going to be interested in it. So I started thinking how I could put it all together, how I could fit it into my own guide. And the result was this book, which is called A Guide to Mystical France. And so really it is a compilation of anything that interests me, anything at all, which is not conventional. So it's not the history, the politics, the architecture, all the normal stuff. It's everything to do with the inner world of the human being.
Well, Nick, you did in this very wonderful book give the pictures, you gave the information and the direction, but you also gave a good deal of the wisdom from within your own heart and these places and the architecture and the history. So you included it all. So I will say it's much more than just a travel guide, and that's why it was so interesting to me and will be to my listeners to explore it, because you answered some of your own questions in your travels by sharing some of your own awareness, and I think it was wonderful. But let me say, indeed, we are much more than we appear to be, and as multidimensional beings of energy and expansive creation, it's truly impossible to know where our soul life or physical life begins or ends, right? So many people believe that the outside world and circumstances are creating their life. But you found something else, and I have found something else too. That's not quite so. It's from within us that we're creating much of the value and beauty that we find in life. And in my book, The Living Spirit, I refer to this thought this way, and I wrote this: many choose to believe it is life circumstances that are at the root of the destruction of so many fine plans, intentions, and opportunities. I believe it is the perception of limitation and self-doubt, not our circumstances, which destroy dreams and thwarts wonderful ideas. What I call the law of attraction is a universal energetic truth of creating our own reality by bringing to us the people and circumstances that our minds and actions generate. What we focus our thoughts, time, and energy on, either knowingly or unknowingly, either positively or negatively, whether lovingly or hatefully, sets up a ripple of interaction with other people, places, and events that brings these possibilities into reality. And in your search, you have brought the beauty of the places and your love for the country into this book and into reality. So what is the message of the book?
The message is that wherever you go, there's more to see than what is apparent. So it's not just the physical appearance of a place or the facts and the statistics. There's always another story to discover. And it needs you, the individual, to trigger that. You are like the catalyst. Your presence there uncovers things dormant's not the right word. They're waiting. They're sort of half hidden, but they're available in the presence. So I want people to see those things that I have seen, that I perceived. I don't claim to have seen everything, but I think each one of us can get a sense of something special, something magical in these places I talk about.
Yes, you do. And you also said problems begin when we categorize each other as just a man or a religious person or an ecologist or a banker, politician, communist, or whatever. If we put these labels on, and you wrote this, Nick, professionally as a travel guide writer, it is my job to stick to the facts and eliminate the airy-fairy variables. I need to get readers where they're going, tell them what they are looking at, and move them on to the next location. However, experience is often treated as the side effect of travel. It is that which we can help having in the process of going where we are going. It is unpredictable and may vary between the ecstatic and the painful, but it is always remains in the realm of feelings and is therefore intangible. All travelers eventually discover in their wisdom there are two aspects to the journey. There is the destination and the experience of getting there. And isn't that what life is?
Very much. I think life is symbolized by travel, and I think travel is an opportunity for us to see that in our ordinary daily lives. We get out of time and go to special places, and we can understand more about our ordinary lives when we come back.
And I like to use the word, you use the word airy fairy, and very often I use that to say to people, because I'm an intuitive healer and a medium, and I'm a very knowledgeable person and practical person and grounded person, and I say, well, you know, I'm not airy fairy, but yet there is a magical quality that delights me, and that is mystical and beautiful and part of our inner wisdom. So I like that I had a coincidence with you and laughed when I saw those words. So does it really matter who we are?
Is that a question for me?
Yes, it's a question for you. Does it really?
I think it does matter.
Yeah.
I think it does matter very, very much. I think you were quoting from my last book a moment ago. The last book was called Who on Earth Are You? And that looks at the human being and tries to show that we are all that we are. We're all the aspects of us as well, but we can only understand a human being as an entirety, as a whole. Every one of us is unique, and we do matter. Every single one of us belongs to reality, and without each one of us, reality would not be the same. So I think we all do matter.
Yes, of course we do. And you wrote, when we travel, we are always exploring two realities simultaneously. The one that you see before you and that we can agree on, countries, cities, monuments, food festivals, etc. And the one inside you, which of course interacts in some mysterious way with the outer reality. Many people are simply only comfortable with their physical reality. Materialists say that is all there is. But you wrote, I find this an unsatisfactory explanation for the rich experience of being a sentient creature. So that is the truth. I think that's why you love travel. I think that's why you share these beautiful places and the pictures in your book with the history and stories, so people can discover much more about the world. And, you know, I'm reminded of something right in this moment. I did hospice care for 8 years as a volunteer, and one day I was with a man who had been a police officer, and all he could talk about to me were all the places he visited. He had gone to Europe 17 times, and he said life would not have been worth living if he didn't have the opportunity to travel and see those places. So I want to say to our audience, even if you travel by watching videos or reading books, you're exercising your mind and you're exploring this world and yourself, and that is the gift of life. So I'm reminded of that and hope that more people, even if they go not that far from home, but still see the beauty in the new day and the new experience. But hopefully they can travel and see some of the beauty of this world. So let's go on to something else. Let's go on to some of the wonderful spots you describe. All right. You talk about cave drawings and prehistoric art in some of the places that you share in this book, this history. Can you tell us about the megalites of Karnak? I found that very interesting.
Yeah. Well, the Karnak is the most famous megalithic site in France. I can't remember exactly how many thousand years BC, but it was only 6,000 years BC, that these large stones were erected in lines. They all line up. And somebody described them as megalithic graph paper, because they're in lines and they seem to be creating a pattern. We don't know exactly what it was for, but it's probably got some astronomical significance, maybe to do with the solstice. But all those stones are there, not that far away from the coast and the beach, standing in the countryside of Brittany. And they're extremely impressive. And they're not the only megaliths in France by any means, but they're certainly the largest collection of them.
Yes, and you know, I believe in your prolific search for clarity and truth in the ancient elements of these physical remains within your own soul journey. You offer a great deal of proof that we are indeed citizens of a much larger universe, an eternal force responding to the ancient wisdom that guides us. And you say we are seeing this through looking at geometry, numbers, nature, architecture, and people who connect to this higher realm of life. So these cave drawings perhaps came from remembrances that these people had from even before this time and place. And it's very interesting, our relationship with this planet and from the life source that comes from underneath, within it, and the secret societies that frequently use caves for the purpose of initiation. So there's a whole lot going on here, much more than meets the mind. And you go on to mention that the Celts believed that death was at the center of a good long life and that the dead should be honored for what they had lived and what they were yet to live. So some places of the dead in France have become tourist attractions. Can you tell us about some of those places?
Well, I give a variety. The megaliths may be to do with funerary rites. We don't know. But in that section of the book, I talk mainly about cemeteries which are modern, well, medieval to modern. So not the ancient things, because we don't know many ancient cemeteries. But there are some fascinating cemeteries, particularly in Paris, the two large ones which people visit a lot. And there's the catacombs, of course. But I look at other cemeteries in France. There are some very interesting ones in the west near Bordeaux, which have little towers in them called Lanterns of the Dead, which we think were lit to guide the souls of the departing. We don't know, but there are these curious little monuments standing there. And so there's lots of interesting things like that in the cemeteries of France to explore.
And you said this was alluded to by Dante and painted by Gauguin and Van Gogh. So
Yeah, that's.
these most talented people have always sensed or downloaded inspiration from a higher source of wisdom or intelligence or energy, or call it what you will, afterlife or spirits or angels. So there is this mysticism throughout France, throughout all of Europe. And I believe the European people are very well aware of it, even more than the Western world or the United States, where I'm speaking from, where I live.
I wouldn't be so sure about that, Cheryl. I think a lot of people don't see it. I really think, Europe is, like you say, very rich in mystical sites. But I think a lot of modern people ignore it. They don't notice what's there. So, it needs to be
Well,
appreciated more.
this show is hoping to help awaken the
Yeah.
beauty and the knowledge and a curiosity in the things we're discussing about for all people, because
Yeah.
it would enlarge their life, their health, and their joy, and the other people they interact with in a most positive way. Now, you go on to discuss the temples of the Romanesque built during the Middle Ages and Gothic forms and through the Romanesque style. Although the Romanesque style was quaint and naive, they might enshrine ancient wisdom. So tell us about some of the oldest churches and what you think the history of some of that is.
Well, in my village, to take one example, we have a Romanesque church. And at first, it doesn't look very much. But when you go inside it, you start noticing there are symbolic sculptures high up above the altar, around the choir. And these symbolic sculptures mean something. They definitely mean something, but nobody knows what. And I'm spending lots of time just looking at them and working it out. And that's just one church out of thousands, literally thousands across France, which were sculptures in the Romanesque period, which is about the 11th, 12th century, all with these marvelous carvings, and rich details of geometry and patterns and mythological animals. It's got a lot of stuff going on in there. And it almost certainly goes back to pagan times, because there's more symbolism than just Christianity. So I like to look at these churches not as churches only. They are of course churches, but I see them as temples, and I see them as a continuation of a tradition of religion, of spirituality, which predates Christianity for sure, and must have echoes of the Celtic people, and even probably links back to the megalithic periods as well.
I can't
prove that.
I see it also as a documentation of our history and our growth from the beginning of this life here in this place, and wishing to know more about who we are and where we come from. So the temple, it seems, is not meant to be a place that is so quick and easy to understand inside or out, but a place of hidden things that maybe speaks to our heart and helps us remember who we are as spiritual beings having a physical life. And if it does that, it's already done a lot. So that's the
right.
Mystery.
Yeah.
That is the mystery, and that is the hope. Now, you go on to mention Mary Magdalene. I have been very interested in the women of history and the church and how they have often been misrepresented in the old stories and in all religions since the beginning of time, except the pagan religion, where men and women were equally, they worked together to do the best they can to provide for their villages and their families. And the women were very respected as healers and equal. It was after that time that somehow women got denigrated to a second-role citizenship. And Mary Magdalene was one of those women. So tell us about what you can about her and the place where you think she lived after she left Jerusalem.
Well, a lot of what we think is the Bible story is not in the Bible. It's subsequent tradition. So it's interesting you talk about the treatment of women in Christianity, because if you read the Bible, you get one impression. But if you listen to subsequent tradition, you get another. And Mary Magdalene, who was effectively a disciple of Jesus, just like all the others, just like the men.
Absolutely.
Was, in later tradition, the men vilified her. They turned her into a prostitute, which is not true at all. There's nothing
right.
in the Bible about that. So we got the impression, when I grew up and went to school, went to church, I was told that Mary Magdalene was a prostitute who was reformed, and she was had to be on her best behavior because she was on probation, because, you know, women are, you know, go back to the fall of Eve and all that. So we have to put aside what we think we know about Mary Magdalene, which is one thing. And in France, in Provence, they have a legend about Mary Magdalene. It's a legend again, so we don't know for sure, but I prefer it to the macho, you know, the male church history. And the legend they say in Provence is that Mary Magdalene left the Holy Land after the crucifixion. And she was in the company of some others, including Lazarus and Martha. And they were set adrift in a boat without oars and sail, so they had no ways of steering. And by miracle, they arrived on the beach of Provence. And there's a church which marks the spot now, which is dedicated to two of her companions, two Marys. Mary Magdalene supposedly went off to convert that part of France, along with Lazarus and Martha. And Mary, in particular, went to live in a cave in the mountains. And that's where she passed the last part of her life. And she might have had a daughter, is one possibility. But she certainly is supposed to have died there. And there is now a shrine to her memory in St. Bohm, where the people really do believe that Mary Magdalene was buried. And for me, that's it's not a provable legend, but it's a very convincing legend.
Well, your story resounds in my heart, and it's the truth that I am aware of, and many, many people are. And unfortunately, sometimes stories are told by men who have agendas and purpose in the times that they live, and they think to protect society, but often it is for their own personal gain. And that's been going on ever since the beginning of time. So we just have to write it where we can, and we can learn about the truth the best way we can. And this rings very true with me. And I've spoken to people in many of my shows that have said exactly what you and I are saying here. So we will go on to another question. You have the last chapter speaking about the future. Do you have any worry about what's going to be happening or will things pretty much stay the same?
Well, I am worried about France because of what happened in Paris only about 2 months ago, when there were attacks, terrorist attacks, in the name of Islam, apparently. And the main problem now is for France to be able to live in peace with its various religions. There's been quite a bit of anti-Semitism as well. So I hope France is able to find a way where all these people can coexist and practice their faiths as they want. And I think
well,
one problem is the fact
yeah,
that...
Yes, Nick, this is a very serious issue we're talking about here. What happened in Paris has been so upsetting for so many American citizens and for the world. And I am for a world coalition of peace and leaders who can bring greater education to the primitive people in societies where there is so much religious strife right now, and to help them build new schools, build new hospitals, build new awareness where the women are no longer, as Mary Magdalene was subjugated to a second role, where the Middle East does that with most of their women. Very few women are allowed to be educated and to walk free. They have a terrible lifestyle for modern times, as far as I see it. This is a world problem, and we need to work on it together, and we have to hope that we can, because we can't move forward with all the technology we have where there's so much primitive behavior going on that's so backward. So we will hope that we can do that. And you also talk about UFOs in France. I've interviewed many guests on this show who have shared their experiences and stories of visits from life forms of other universes. So what would you like to say about that? That was in your book.
Yeah, well, the curious thing about France is it's the only country that maintains a state-run agency which investigates UFOs. It's a team of scientists, a very small team of scientists, who collect data that when people have a report, they pass it to them, and these people investigate it, and they see if there's a natural explanation to things like a weather balloon or atmospheric conditions. They're neither for or against UFOs. They're very straight down the middle. And after all that, after years and years of operating, there is a residue of, I think it's 100 or 200 cases, come to handy, that are not explained. So it seems like the French government is producing evidence which suggests it's all true.
Well, I've interviewed many people, and there's a great deal of evidence that suggests that we're not the only ones in the universe. And why would we think we are? It's a vast universe and many life forms to meet up with and enjoy and learn from, I hope. That is my hope. I want to thank you, Nick Inman, for sharing a practical tour through the beauty and history of France, both in fantastic pictures and information of great detail and insight. Not only do you share the mystery of the land and people, but of the deeper inner workings of our being and the metaphysical view of evolving through time and space and life. For more information and to purchase this book, go to finehornpress.com or nickinman.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have visited the world of history, architecture, symbols, mysteries, and the places where over centuries people have sought answers to age-old questions of life, death, creation, the universe, love, ethics, and ways to improve our human condition. Nick shared the story of Lourdes, a place that many feel to be touched by the love of Mother Mary, who on February 11, 1858, first appeared to a young girl, Bernadette, and then appeared to her for 18 visits. This young girl could see her, but others could not. Psychologically or symbolically, apparitions are sometimes experienced by adolescents who are in transition from childhood to adulthood, much like the difference between reality and imagination. As the cave that we talked about earlier represents the inner person, the subconscious or soul, what comes out of these mystical experiences into the light of day or a physical reality is a realization of our highest self. Nick and I would have you travel within the recesses of your memories and soul knowledge and to try to move beyond the ordinary or familiar aspects of your everyday life to find the beauty and expansive world you may see through your travels, meditation, through reading, music, art, enjoyment of the senses, and then refine your thoughts and actions by having an open heart and mind. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to visit my website to hear leaders and authors, practitioners, educators, artists, musicians, and creative members of our world community share their experiences and insights into the world of possibilities for reaching our highest human potential. Shows may also be heard on DreamVision7Radio.com and WebTalkRadio.net. Thank you.